Hello, and welcome to We Are The University, a podcast about the people who make Cambridge University unique. I'm your host, Nick Saffel. I'm here with Prem Gill, and Prem, I think you have a pop quiz for me.
I do indeed. I'm going to be playing some noises from my Antarctic seals, and I'm going to be playing some other noises, which are space recordings from our space weather station in Halley. So the game is, can you guess whether this is seal or space? Okay, ready?
Ready, can't wait.
All right, first sound. What are you thinking?
I'm gonna say space because it sounded slightly windy. I know there's no wind, but you know, it doesn't sound okay. It doesn't sound like a sort of, it sounded more rhythmic, but then maybe seals do have rhythm, I don't know. But yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
yeah.
Flawed logic, but you were right, so you did get to the right answer.
Okay, good.
So yeah, that was space. That was so that's the noise emitted by the Southern Lights. And they emit these natural radio waves, which are picked up by our low-frequency radio receivers. And when it's sonified, it makes that noise, which we've dubbed the Dawn Chorus. So I guess, I mean, it's almost, it's not quite a wind, but it is in the atmosphere.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, not a bad answer.
I was almost just picturing a remote station on Antarctica, and you know, just the that's what it sounded like. And I was just thinking, it can't be a seal. That's what popped up straight in my mind.
Got it. Okay.
That's where I was going.
Well,
with
I'm
going
to play another noise. I'll be interested to see the logic behind your answer for this, even if it is correct.
Because I'm going to say seal, but I also can see the space because it sounds to me a bit like, do you remember those zorbing tubes that used to shake it and make a sort of lasery sound?
No, I think they were called like fundus sticks when I last saw them. Sticks. Yeah, I know what you're on about. So,
but I'm going to go with seal because even though it sounds something similar to that and it almost has a spacey feel to it, which I guess what is the point between the quiz, but I'm going to say seal.
Okay, yes, you have definitely got the right answer there.
I couldn't tell you what seal it is, but...
I mean, well done, because you're the first person to get 100% on this quiz.
Thank you very much, even with my flawed logic.
Even with your flawed logic, which has worked out for the best. Yeah. But yes, that was a Weddell seal. And what I stumbled upon is the fact that Weddell seals essentially make a very, very similar noise to the Southern Lights in Antarctica. And I thought, oh, not only is that quite fun and interesting, but I knew I was due to speak alongside the European Space Agency on my research. And I was quite nervous about that presentation because I was the only student. There was four speakers. And everyone else was the heads of various sort of departments within space agencies or tech companies. So I figured, how do I get them to listen to my presentation instead of going on to Facebook? So
grab their attention straight away.
Yeah. So I did the pop quiz, which I did with you. And after I did that pop quiz, someone approached me from the Alan Turing Institute, who had actually met a few months before from when I had done a bit of research there. And he said, oh, by the way, hey, Prem, just so you know, I make techno music on the side. Would you like to make this into a song? And I said yes, and now it's grown into this big 3D immersive experience, which will include not so much a techno song, but a grime song, which is the backdrop to this 3D immersive experience, which will tell you about the plight of the seals, the latest conservation science that's being done, and who are the conservationists saving these seals.
I can understand the drift from techno to grime. Mm-hmm. It has a sort of more...
a bit electronic, I guess.
Yeah, it's a bit more... you'd think techno had a bit more electronic than grime.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah. As in, why did I go for grime over techno?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the reason I went for grime is, I listened to grime. Fair enough. When I first heard the noises, I'm like, oh, this would make an amazing grime song. Actually, the other day, I was just listening to grime songs, and also in the background, at the same time playing the noises of Antarctic seals to see if they fit. And yeah, they work really well as a good backdrop to Grime Song. So it totally fits well. Yeah. And also I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if I could get Stormzy involved in me making a Grime Song via seals? I think that would be ticking off so many life goals. Work with seals, create a Grime Song, get Stormzy involved on it. And I don't want to make any promises, but what's essentially happened is by using Grime, it's quite good because, okay, I'm a big fan, but aside from me being a fan, lots of young inner city kids listen to this, and typically kids from schools that might not be exposed to conservation. So it's a really, really good way of getting them to see what's going on with my state of the art research. And also then I get to do the whole thing of, hey guys, we all like Grime. I'm someone who's like you, doing polar science. You should totally get involved. And then, you know, from there, present various opportunities, or just allowing them to know that we exist and you should come, you know, work in this field, and you can become a polar scientist, you can become a conservationist. You don't have to be David Attenborough, you don't have to be Captain Scott, you don't have to be an XR rebellion protester getting arrested. You can just be a guy like me with a career in this field who sometimes makes grime music from seals.
Seals in space. So I'm just guessing you're sort of spying on seals and their colonies using...
I am. So I use very, very, very high resolution satellite images.
How high resolution are we talking here?
So if you left your laptop out in Antarctica, I would be able to see the laptop all the way from space in my satellite image. So essentially anything that is bigger than an A4 piece of paper, and as long as the color contrasts with the background, you should be able to pick it out. So that means I can see seals, it means I can see baby seals, and if a seal has just given birth, when we take the image and there's blood on the sea ice from the seal giving birth, you can even see the blood all the way from space.
Wow, so it is a super easy method of population monitoring.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, really effective method because if you think about this region I'm studying, it's Antarctica, and these seals live and breed on the sea ice. So not only do you have the issue of it being dangerous, inaccessible, and expensive, you also have the issue of it's a sea ice habitat which expands to its maximum extent in winter to an area that's roughly double the size of Europe. So going out in a plane or going out in a boat is just not feasible for the scale we're dealing with, which is the normal method of monitoring wildlife populations. But with these satellite images, you can capture the whole region and get global population counts for these Antarctic seals for the first time. So it's very, very exciting technology.
How do you tell the difference between a seal and a rock?
So that is a big, big issue, is that my seals look a lot like rocks, and there's many, many rocks. So essentially what I have to do in that situation is something called ground truthing, and that's where you will go visit the place where you take your satellite images and actually look to see if it's a rock or a seal in person. But it's expanding on that, and it's coming up with a way of figuring out how can we have it so the satellite image and the computer programs we use to look at these satellite images will always be able to detect what's a seal and what's a rock. And a really cool way of doing that is by doing something called spectral imaging. So I'm going to go out into Antarctica, I'm going to have a special camera, and that's going to tell me this precise tone of the seal's fur, and it will tell me the precise tone of black for the rock. And you can feed in these signatures to do with the tones of their color into a computer system. So when you're flying a drone or looking at satellite images, automatically the computer will be able to say this difference in tone of black, which the human eye can't perceive, but the computer can at these different wavelengths, will be able to tell you whether it's a seal or a rock. And then you should hopefully be able to automate that. And also just taking thermal images. So, you know, a rock is not going to be warm, but a seal will. So I'm going to be taking thermal and spectral images of the seals when I go out in Antarctica.
Because when you just say the thermal, I'm just thinking of just all the pictures I've ever seen of like seals on rocks or beaches or anything like that. They're just millions of them.
Yeah.
So how finite can you get a thermal imagery? Does it not just look like a big red glowing something on top of a big blue glowing?
So I mean, I guess first of all, it depends on the colony of seals. So often in Antarctica, you'll have they can be really close up and quite gregarious and just in a big, big mass. But often you will get a few seals thinly dispersed over a large expanse. But what's quite good is with the resolution of thermal imagery we're using is that you should be able to pick out the individual thermal signatures of each seal, because it is quite high resolution, the cameras we're using. And what's quite cool is not only is it just detecting, oh, is there warm body mass here or not? It's looking at, can we detect a difference in thermal signatures between species and between behavioral states? And what I mean by that is if you take a satellite image, just or a drone image of a seal that's on a bit of sea ice, all you can say is what's happening in that specific moment in time. So you can see there's a seal on a bit of sea ice near the water's edge. You don't have much more information. But if you take a thermal image, that almost gives you a window into the past few hours. Because an interesting thing with seals is when they go diving, all their blood gets diverted away from their external limbs and goes to their vital organs. But when the seal is digesting food and it's up on land, its blood will be redistributed, and you should be able to detect that difference in a thermal image. So we go from just having it snapshot in time where you're saying, okay, there's a seal in this specific location, but we don't know if it's just come out of the water, we don't know if it's going to enter the water, to saying, oh, there's a seal in this location, and the reason it's there is because it's digesting its food right now, because we can see that from the thermal images.
Environmental science, Antarctica, seals. Where did your passion for your research become?
I mean, to be honest with you, I sort of fell into the field through my university choices. So I applied to do geography. It ended up being marine geography at Cardiff University, and I had just thought of all geography being human geography. And then when I took on the course and I arrived there, I realized in my first week that, oh, we're doing science, physics, maths, and oh, there's a boat, and oh, we have to go swim. And I couldn't swim. I didn't do any science A-levels, so I was very concerned. But I thought to myself, as a teen, I had always really, really wanted to be just someone working in wildlife, almost like David Attenborough. And I always wanted to be exposed to wildlife, because I would grow up watching these BBC Nature documentaries, and I would be aware that, you know, there's a whole variety of wildlife within Britain, essentially on our doorsteps, such as, you know, foxes, owls, badgers, and so on, even seals and dolphins. But I just never really saw that, because I grew up in like an inner city urban area, and my parents as well, they come from North India, and in an ironic way, even though they are from a more rural agricultural area, they don't partake in any recreational activities
in Britain.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, so even though my parents are from like a rural area, when it comes to recreational activities, there are no rural recreational activities that really happens from where they're from. You don't really go camping, you don't really go for nature walks,
country walks.
Yeah, no, the land is just something you work on, and it is work. It's not something you really necessarily get to enjoy in the way we do here, where we have specific activities. So just convincing them to let me go camp, they didn't really get it. Like, why do you want to go sleep in a tent? We've worked so hard to get this house, and blah blah blah. So I just had this sort of scenario in which I always wanted to just be immersed in nature, but I couldn't quite get it. And I think in a weird way, just having a slight lack of it, because my parents weren't involved in these sort of rural activities, just made me want it even more. So then when I ended up studying marine geography, and we ended up going on all these field trips, working offshore and working, you know, in the woods of South Wales and so on, I just loved it. And then, oh God, yeah.
Had you learned to swim at this point?
No, I hadn't actually.
Have you learned to swim now?
No, I haven't. I still can't swim. So I've done a degree in marine geography. I've worked as a seafloor mapper offshore. And now I work with seals and sea ice, and I still can't swim, I'm afraid.
What's that feeling like when you're in a boat Have you? I guess you've been. You've been on a boat by now, because
I used to work on boats all the time, just mapping the C4. That was my job before coming here. To be honest with you, because I always have a life jacket, I'm too brave, I feel, for my own good.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the fact that your family didn't take you out to indoors. Is that quite common for kids from your background?
Yeah, I think certainly. So when I was growing up, I had a very diverse mix of friends, simply because I was from a diverse inner city area. So, you know, some of my best friends are Zambian, some are Kenyan, others are Pakistani, some are from the Caribbean. And with most of us from a Black and Asian background, being involved in nature is just not something we really did.
You went there to collect and study animals?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, the field was just a place where you could play football, more or less, rather than it being a place for nature. It's just somewhere you can kick a ball without smashing someone's window in.
Okay.
Basically, so there's just a real unacquaintance, and it's just not normalized. And I remember just really weird stuff. Like, I remember I was getting a scan of my teeth in a hospital in Cardiff, and the woman doing this, my scan, was a young Pakistani woman, and she was saying to me, "Oh, you know, what do you do?" I said, "I do marine geography." And she was really taken back. She goes, "Oh, I remember I took like biology as an A-level, and we went off to the beach and we were working in rock pools." And she said, like, I remember this distinctively. She goes, "And I found it so weird, you know, people like us being around a rock pool." So there's just such a big, I don't know. It's such a nebulous thing that you, I haven't really thought enough about it to really put it quite into words, but it's just something that you subconsciously sort of know is a bit odd to do for your community. With my parents, the thought of going camping, going walking, is really, really alien to them. And not just alien, you know, if you're working class, you're working long hours in a minimum wage job, you just don't have the time or physical energy to go do physical stuff in a really far away place. It's just various reasons why they won't get involved. But I'm trying to change that so much. And because, you know, they're getting a bit older, and I want them to be able to just enjoy nature and be exposed to it, because it is a beautiful thing we have in this country. And it is, you know, sad that we can't all have access to it. So what I did for my birthday, which was last Saturday, I had my parents come up to Cambridge, and I actually took them to the Norfolk coast, and I showed them seals for the first time. My parents were so amazed. I think it's one of the best things they've ever had. Like, my mum really liked it because there were baby seals being born. Actually, we're hoping there's going to be a record number of seal pups being born there, hopefully over 2,000. And
what's brought on the record? What is it?
It's just been each year they've just been doing quite well, and we just presume it's going to keep going that way as long as there's no big disease.
I guess the numbers, if there's more of them, then there's more chance of them growing. Okay, right.
Yeah, so with the seals, I thought, oh, this is like the perfect birthday thing. One is I get to have my parents, you know, be exposed to nature, because for me, I feel really awesome being able to work with seals and go to Antarctica and the Arctic, and just, you know, even just going on boats around the UK. I feel really good about that. But I really, really, really want my friends and family from back home to also have these sort of different experiences that I get to enjoy. So yeah, like I said, I had my parents come up because I thought, it's my birthday, it's the seal's birthday.
Loads of birthdays all at once.
And they just loved it so much. And my mum was like, she really liked it because she saw baby seals and the mums looking after them. And I think my parents just... My mum said to me she thought she would never ever see such a sight in her life, because, yeah, she's seen seals on TV. And even though her own son, she's seen videos and pictures of me working with seals, it's just such an alien thing to them. And my dad even asked if there's any seals in Ilford, because we have a relative visiting. But yeah, I don't think there is any exactly in Ilford. But to be fair,
isn't it? Do you find seal? I might be asking a stupid question, but is that true? You can find seals in little bits of rivers, but that might be closer to a like a sort of estuary.
No, you're completely right. So in the Thames, the seals have returned. So you can find common seals in the Thames, and their numbers are increasing because, you know, the Thames, there's been lots of effort to clean it up and wildlife is coming back, and that includes seals. So there are seals in the Thames estuary.
I'm getting a sense of enthusiasm and inspiration. And are you trying to continue that on to, you know, people behind you, you know, trying to inspire them?
So
school kids now.
I mean, I've only got into this within the past few years, so it's not that hard for me to look at what my life was a year or two ago and realize I'm in a very lucky position, and to get into this is so difficult. Polar research is difficult because, I mean, just the concept of doing science in Antarctica, some people might have an image of Victorian explorers, or other people will just have an idea of you have to be some sort of rich globe-trekking explorer, I guess a modern-day Victorian explorer, and the idea of just working in Antarctica is just not feasible at all. And then also with conservation, the issue you have there is people see images of conservation a bit more often. It doesn't seem so far-fetched. But again, with conservation, it's something where you need a lot of money because you don't just need a degree in it. You also need lots of experience, and conservation is the one STEM subject where you will typically not be paid for internships. I mean,
you're paying for the internship.
You're paying
I imagine.
For the internships, most of the cases, you know, thousands of pounds to spend some time working in Indonesia or the Caribbean or the Philippines on, you know, coral reefs and whatever it is. So it's just so many barriers from what I do, and I'm also in, you know, Cambridge University, so. Whether it's Oxbridge, whether it's polar research, whether it's conservation, each of those on their own have their own barriers and very difficult to get to. So now I'm here, I really want to, you know, sort of hit all three birds with one stone and just open the field and provide opportunities for, you know, working class kids. Because I guess my main goal in life was I just want to open up opportunities to working class kids to be able to choose which career they want. Mm. And just know that they have the capacity to do it. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to get a PhD in science from the best university for science, and I'll sort of be the proof of the pudding that not only can you do it, but also while I'm here, I'm going to just open the doors now while I'm here rather than wait and just allow people to come in. And I guess one thing I've done is I've set up a network for ethnic minorities and polar research to provide a support platform for ethnic minorities who are already in the field, because when it comes to academia, it can be really lonely. And I'm sure you working in comms, you've been pushing out so much stuff to do with mental health and those aspects of academia in the past sort of couple of months, in the past year. But academia is lonely. Studying polar regions is even isolating.
More lonelier. Yeah.
And then if you're visibly different to everyone else in your department, it can be even more lonely. And I always thought to myself, I don't want there to be an ethnic minority somewhere in a department who's the only one, and if, you know, they're feeling like they might have issues, they don't know who to talk to. I don't want them to feel like they can't speak to anyone because there is no one for them to take the risk of confiding in if there's no one who looks like them. So I thought I'll set up the network, and it's a support platform for everyone who's in the field. And then also I want to change society's image of what an Antarctic explorer is to inspire, you know, young Black and Asian kids to get involved, but also people who are a bit older, who are more university level, who are now looking for careers to enter into. So I've set up an internship to have 10 students work with me on my Seal from Space project, and we're going to spend a week just going through state-of-the-art wildlife monitoring techniques using this satellite imagery and just, you know, giving them this resource, which typically costs thousands of pounds for free, and just giving them these skills, which are very cutting edge. And most other conservationists who perhaps have the money to go to Indonesia and Australia and do the typical forms of volunteering where you're working and diving, they won't have those skills. So I guess it's very, very good in that it's cutting edge conservation skills that not many other people will have, but also it's very cost effective because you just need to bring in a laptop.
A laptop, and you can do it anywhere.
You can do it anywhere. So yeah, whether it's a case of you can't afford to leave where you are, or you have dependents to look after, or you know your parents need help, or even if you've got a work part-time in Asda and so on your summer holidays, you can still do this work in the evenings from the laptop through the satellite imagery I will provide to these kids.
And I guess you're doing a lot with your public profile as well of an explorer looks like.
Yeah. So one thing I'm trying to do, again, because I want to change the image, is not just the image within my field, because, you know, within my field, it's not that hard to go, hi, I exist. It's changing society's image, which is much, much more difficult because that is not formed by who is actually the polar scientist. It's formed by what the media shows the polar scientist being, and what the movies show, and what the documentaries show, and what you know, just general media shows as being this person rather than the actual people. And, you know, the way it is we think of Antarctica and Antarctic science, Antarctic exploration, as very much a something of the Victorian period, you know, sepia-toned photos, and it isn't necessarily the case, because both past and present, Antarctica has had a history in which it's not just been Victorian-like Western white individuals only being the ones involved. It's always had a variety of people. I mean, the oldest human remains within Antarctica is a skull which belongs to a indigenous South American woman, which, you know, even people who work within polar museums who I've spoken to don't realize this.
Yeah, it's a totally different story than the one you normally hear.
Yeah, and even stuff like the sealers who were white and Western, such as the Americans and the British people going down to hunt seals. Well, they were being funded by Canton in China. So again, there's this global perspective to do with Antarctica, which we don't realize. And just if you look at it in the present day, you have people like me doing polar conservation. And even if you look at it on more of a global scale, you have various nations in Asia and Africa who are involved in polar research, whether that's the South African Antarctic Program, whether it's India, it's Japan, it's Korea, it's China. There's lots and lots of players in this field. So yeah, what's the best way to change the image? Well, a lot of it is just free media, and I try to make an effort of trying to accept as many interview requests as I can, because for me, it's not a case of, oh, I get to talk about my research. It's, you know, one of the main drivers is let's visibly change the appearance, and I want people to hear polar explorer. And I purposely title myself as a polar explorer because I want people's minds to imagine someone who doesn't look like me. So when they meet me, it makes the point.
So that's where sort of polar prem, the persona of polar prem comes from.
Polar prem comes from that, because I want people to think polar scientists, what's that, polar explorer, what am I thinking? And then they meet me and they're like, oh, that is not, you know, what I would have imagined. And then from there, I get to hopefully talk to young kids. And National Geographic have a kids magazine, and they were really, really lovely and did an interview with me. So sort of like a big interview to do with inspiring kids on how to enter various careers. And, you know, typically they deal with like wildlife photographers and so on. But with me, they were really, really nice in that they highlighted the whole idea of, I want to change the image of an Antarctic explorer. And they talked about my background. They sort of mentioned how, you know, they talked about my family and so on, and just little snippets of stories. Like, I guess one story they included is my mum not really knowing what I do. And that's not just Antarctic science. It's just me being in university after I've done a degree. Just even that is something quite hard for a lot of people from sort of working class ethnic minority communities to grasp. And I remember my mum was shopping in Asda, and one of her customers said to her, oh, it's really chilly in here, it's like the North Pole. My mum was like, oh, my son's in the North Pole. She goes, oh, what's he doing there? She's like, oh, just a school trip looking for polar bears. Yeah, so she doesn't, all these cute stories, they kind of threw all of them in there. So, and it's really nice because kids who see that magazine be like,
oh, he's got parents which are exactly like mine. If he is a guy who's doing studying seals from space in Antarctica, then I can do it too. And they definitely can, because I'm not anyone who's special. I just do this because I do it. I don't do it because I'm a special person. It's just what I happen to do. So therefore, you all can do it, because I can assure you I'm not a special guy by any stretch of the imagination at all.
Do you hear that, everyone? Anyone can do it. Anyone can spot a seal from space, can they?
Anyone can. Well, that's, you know, in the first week of December, I'll have 10 students working with me from Black and Asian backgrounds who will be spotting seals and satellite images, and they'll see for themselves that you can do it. And with the 3D immersive experience, we're going to make it that you can virtually do the science I'm literally doing. And instead of it being like a sort of top down, oh, here's a field, here's what you can do, they just physically do it. And I almost want them to not realize they're doing the literal science I do until the very end, when through the virtual experience, we sort of thank them for contributing to this high impact project, which will contribute to the first ever global population counts for these seals. And they're like, oh, is that what it is? I can definitely do that. I can consider it. So yeah, yeah.
I guess it's almost like sort of getting to them, the fact that this is what the end goal is, but you know, to get there, you're just like, you've got to,
yeah, here are the stepping stones. Yeah, so some of it is, well, here's some experience. Some other things are like, you don't have, just showing people that, look, I'm doing it, I'm not special, you don't have to be special. And I make a big effort of, I guess, highlighting or showing my parents in my social media feeds, and not just my science, so people can really see that I am just a normal guy like them, with parents like them, you know. And I've had really lovely people on Twitter, you know, reach out to me. And there's one person who's a creator, Miranda Lowe at the Natural History Museum, and she was saying, you know, just to give some context, she's a Black biologist at the Natural History Museum, right. And she's really, really big inspiration of mine. But she sent me a message going, oh, hi, I love your post. I really love the ones about your parents. My parents are so similar. And it's just that nice connection there that, you know, it doesn't take much for me to highlight it, and you might not think of it as much, but for a lot of people, just seeing that makes it what I do much more plausible, much more down to earth, much more accessible. Because it is just...
it's just totally likable to their situation.
Yeah, I'm the seal from space guy.
That's it from us at the We Are The University podcast. If you like what you're hearing, don't forget to head on over to the iTunes Store or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts from and give us a 5-star rating. I'm Nick Suffell, and see you next week.